Commission will come to order for the administrative matters meeting. It is 10:57, February 16th, 2017. We have two items on the consent calendar. I move approval of those.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries.
Great. Then moving to the discussion matters. First thing is the Lifeline program and consumer affairs questions.
Well, this came up with Stacy and I the last time we sat down and visited, and Stacy makes a very good point that she gets, and if you were to look on the report of consumer affairs for the year, there's a whole category of quick referral category, Stacy, or there's a whole category of Lifeline complaints.
Yeah. They should be on
that. Lifeline calls that we get, and really, we don't have any information to offer these people. They are calling about eligibility, or they're calling about for more information about how to get their phone or whatever. And so we are used. You can call the Public Service Commission at, and our number's on there, and I think that was some agreement that we entered into at some point. But I would really like to see, because it's nice to have a phone number, but it's not getting people any answers anyway, so I think it's not serving the public well by putting it there, getting that off of this letter somehow, and preferably putting on a more effective letter or better information about where these calls can be addressed. So, Stacy, I wanted to throw this on here,
and that's
for discussion.
And that's one thing that I'm not even sure of is, and I've been keeping track just within the last 2 weeks of questions that I get that I can't answer, and I sometimes don't even know where to send them to. A lot of times they'll call because their application was rejected, and so then they call and ask why, which obviously I don't have any clue. And a lot of times the phone companies are referring them to us, because it's always been my understanding that the phone company submits the paperwork up to the federal level. But if there's problems with that, then the phone companies tend to refer them to us, which we have nothing to do with the applications. So then I don't even know where to refer them at the federal level to get that solved. Actually, last week I got a call from Social Services because apparently the way you prove your eligibility changed as of December, and they were having applications being rejected. Yeah, and I obviously didn't know anything about it, so I went on USAC's website, and they did have a notice on there saying as of December, whatever it was, they no longer accept certain forms of eligibility. And so, but Social Services was really confused as to why we didn't know about that or why I didn't know about that. So I don't know how the information is supposed to flow down and what our role is, but I get a lot of questions that I can't answer. And as you can see by the letter sent out, we're the only phone number on there. So, and it's rightfully frustrating for the people calling in because they call the number expecting answers because that's the number on there and I can't help them a lot, and then they get frustrated, and I don't blame them for that. So I wanted to open up the conversation about how this all works, how it got started, and if there's a better way that we can serve those mm-hmm. people calling in.
Well, I guess this would be my portfolio. I don't have a solution offhand for you. Some extent.
We do approve the ETC status for these carriers. So if they're denied, I suppose if you were a customer that felt you were entitled to it and a company was denying you, and they shouldn't be.
The company doesn't deny the federal, the FCC denies them. That's what happens. They submit, the company submits the paperwork up. So it's not the phone companies denying them. It's that the federal program denies them.
But wouldn't most complainants probably be because they felt discriminated against or something like that, or and so they're looking for someone to lodge a complaint with. And I don't know what our role would we have a role in telling them what potential Lifeline providers are in their area?
That's one of the common questions I get, yes.
And
I personally think the federal government has hoisted this on us, just giving us this ETC thing, and it, which is somewhat meaningless. And they shouldn't be hoisting the customer service for this program, which is theirs, on us too. It should be back to the feds.
A lot of them are very specific to the application. Like just the other day, a lady called and said she had applied and it was denied because somebody was already registered at that address and you can't have more than one person at that address. And it was Verizon. And I said, well, you know, did Verizon, you know, try and correct that, or what do you do to correct that? And they said, no, they told us to call you. And then I was like, I have no idea what to do from there. So where at the federal level, then do I, there is a number on USAC's website if you go there. But right before that, it says if you are having any problems, call your state public service commission for assistance. So even on the USAC website, they're directing people to us, but I can't help with applications at the federal level. So it does get really, really
frustrating.
What's
USAC?
What does it stand for again?
Universal Service Administration Company. Administrative.
They administer the program.
That's the Universal Service Fund. They're the keepers of, and distributors of Universal Service Fund dollars.
Yeah.
They administer the program for FCC, I think, right, is how it works?
They administer the program. They administer, yeah, the FCC, you know, adopted the rules that created the funds that they administer.
Okay.
And their website directs people to call their Public Utility Commission?
The FCC has all the rules about who qualifies, and the rules for not having, you know, more than one person at a location. It's those are the FCC rules.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you said, it seems like they should enforce those rules,
right?
Answer questions about the rules, but if you wanted to, we could become more familiar with the rules and we could say, well, here are the FCC rules when somebody calls with a question.
The only problem with that in going down that path is that we don't ultimately have any say over the decision. And so if we're going to be saying, here's what the rules are, and somebody, and then passing them to somebody else to actually get the decision, and the decision is denied, we've got nothing to do with it. So I just don't think that's a very effective role for us, because we're not ultimately going to be able to solve any problems. We're just, I think we should get out of it. We should get less involved, not more.
And just by way of background, when the Lifeline program first came out, the commission did develop its own criteria for those people that would be eligible. But shortly after that, then we went back to being a federal, what they call a federal default state, where anybody that wants to qualify for Lifeline has to qualify under the FCC's criteria.
And that was a decision by us?
That was in response to, I know it was in the legislature for a while, but it was in response to a company that had customers in two different states. And the two states, we had our own criteria, and the other state used the federal criteria, and they saw it as an administrative issue.
So you're saying we started out being the grantor of these?
That's why we have our phone numbers on the letters and
okay.
stuff. So that's the background.
So we started out being the decider of who got service and who didn't, and now we aren't.
We developed the criteria initially. That looked a lot like the FCC's
criteria. And we approved them or not? Did we ultimately approve them?
No. The human services would determine whether that customer, that person, qualified under our criteria. And that's how we got human services involved in it.
Because it was their, the
The criteria was there. Yep.
Food stamps, Medicaid.
Well, this is for low-income families, and you know, and that's where the basis of human services is. But that's
and so that's why I mean, when U.S. West developed their Lifeline program, and when North Minot Telephone Company, or now the SRT, developed their program, the human services was working directly with the companies to provide the list of customers mm-hmm. who were eligible. When they had the list, then human services and social services program would send out certificates to customers saying they were eligible for this Lifeline link-up program.
Mm-hmm. This letter that still happens, though, right?
That still happens, but apparently, like I said, they're not even being notified of changes at the federal level because they were not aware yesterday or last week when they called that there had been changes, and they were confused because applications were being denied because for one instance, the energy assistance, the LIHEAP, whatever it's called, LIHEAP, they can't qualify under that anymore was one of the changes. And there was a couple other ones that FCC removed as a way to show your eligibility. And they didn't know anything about it. I didn't until I went, and there was a notice on USAC's website. But
and the reason why we don't know about it is because we're not involved so much anymore in the qualifying criteria.
Well, maybe we don't have enough information to decide right now, but I think
we should be moving toward, let's at least be looking into taking this off of the letter they send out. If the USAC, if someone goes on their website and it directs them to a state public utility commission, there's not much we can do about that, then I suppose they're going to call here.
Right.
But I want to get back to our consumer affairs report. I don't think I found what you're looking at. All I see is for the whole year one Lifeline and one Lifeline/LinkUp contact.
No, if you go to the quick referrals, there's a separate category for Lifeline right at the beginning. So the first page after quick referrals, there's 82 of them listed there. And then there might be other ones scattered if I referred them to a specific company. And those might be the ones that you're seeing. Like if they specifically wanted to sign up for Lifeline with CenturyLink, then I would refer them to CenturyLink. And then it's going to show up under CenturyLink. But
so you get quite a few of these.
Mm-hmm. 82 is what it shows specific just to information. So I just answered some kind of a question or tried to.
Okay, well, how about if in the next couple of weeks we look at, I don't know what the process would be to getting us off this letter.
I'm assuming the first question is going to be what number do we put on there?
None. And there isn't a live body any place for the program, then there isn't a number to put on there.
We can make sure that the link to the FCC website is correct and that there's that website provides enough information.
And then one of the main things, too, is that they should call their telephone company because that's who they sign up with. The telephone company should know the details of how to get signed up, you know, what the rates are, that sort of thing. So the other important thing is for them to go directly to the telephone company for some of that information. But what happens with when the telephone companies start referring them to us, then I don't know, but we can deal with that.
And that's the thing.
They do that a lot.
You know, if you're the local telephone provider, you provide this service, but you have human services pushing this on people, and then you have some of these other companies that come in as Lifeline onlys and run around and set up, you know, their car trunk deals at rodeos and stuff, you know, trying to get people to do this, and they sign up and get rejected by FCC, and then it's not really fair to us to say, oh, well, go call your telephone company for the answer either. So I don't think it's right to encourage that. They don't know what to do with these calls either, I would think. But to at least remove ourselves, we can think about it a little bit, but I don't have a solution of what we should add or who to contact.
Well, yeah, maybe you guys want to talk about it and pursue a little bit. I think that it's one of those things where, you know, we're a number of staff down. We don't need to be dealing with this. We can't help these people anyway. So let's get rid of it. And direct them as best we can. And you know what? Somebody else can figure out where they get these calls answered. This is not a problem.
USAC does have a number listed. If you go on their website, they have like a bunch of steps, like first try this, first try this, first try this. If right. nothing else works, it says, then you can call this number. So I don't know if that number is helpful or not, but I have referred people to it because I have nowhere else to refer them to. And also when they are looking for companies, they do have a place on their website where you can search by state and it lists all the companies. So I do refer people to that a lot because mm-hmm. that's the only resource that I really have for easily referring them to all the different companies that offer it. So
we should make it clear to Human Services that it's between the company, the provider, and USAC that this program exists. We are not the provider of the program. And so we should be off this letter, and I don't think it's your responsibility, Stacy, to solve all the problems for the folks that are calling on it. I mean, yeah. they'll have to do some more digging on their own and get to the bottom of it.
I just feel bad because I can't help them. And,
right.
And they have a good point because they always go, well, your number is listed yeah. on the letter. And I'm exactly. like, I know what it is.
Yeah. Well, we got to get that squashed. But give us a little bit of time here. Let's see if we can find out if there's a number that should go on there.
But you should at least get it squashed, get ours off in the interim before another number is found to add if there isn't one. Because there is a link to the FCC Lifeline program, and that's probably maybe you put that USAC, if there's a link to them, put that on there. And
I think we can relatively quickly check on the FCC site and the USAC site and see what's available.
Yeah, and then do we need to take some kind of action to give someone authority to tell Human Services we want off of this?
I wouldn't think so.
You got everything you need. Okay.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
And then number two is the Meridian Davis Refinery.
This one is out there again, this refinery. This is the one that's being proposed out by the park. I know we've written to them at least once or twice asking for clarification. And they're doing, they say in all their information that it's going to be 55,000 whatever
barrels
per day, is it, in a refinery, whatever the measurement is. And that's our site. That would be within our siting jurisdiction, but they're splitting it up into two pieces, apparently. And so I've been told by some who are concerned about this that the other agencies are forcing them to site it at the top level or get the permit for the maximum level, like the health department is forcing them to permit it at 55,000. So if that's the case, I mean, do we do the same? Or do we not have the ability to do the same? That they, because what they're, it sounds like they might end up doing either intentionally or just by virtue of happenstance, that they build it and then expand it. And then it's the expansion when the footprint is already there, the expansion that actually comes to us for permitting for a site.
I will say this. We wrote to them, and they've got legal people who are very experienced in dealing with PSC things and wrote back to us that adamant that, no, it's a 27,500-barrel refinery, and so it doesn't require siting. And it really concerns me. You know, I'm reading one paragraph out of the front page, top of the fold, out of the Bismarck Tribune, but we all know sometimes these things are misrepresented in the press, too. It says here, though, Dan Hedrington, project manager for Meridian Energy's group's Davis Refinery, said the 55,000-barrel capacity capacity refinery is still in the works. So you're right, those things continue to be out there. And when it comes to our other siting things, it seems to me we've always relied on companies to bring us the things that required siting, but knowing if they built something that didn't, it could cause them big problems. Someone else brings that to our attention, and all of a sudden they get delayed and have to go through a siting process. With this outfit, I don't know, it really concerns me because we know there's opposition to this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be surprised if they get their other health department, whatever permits they need, I'll be surprised if then those opponents don't bring this up, that they need this. And I suppose if they do at that point, we'll be looking at it and look at, we then won't rely on what's been in the press. We'll look at their actual documents. And if this is a 55,000 barrel refinery, they're going to have to get delayed and start a whole siting process.
I've looked on their website. The company's own website talks about a 55,000 barrel refinery, but it's ultimately a 55,000 barrel refinery is how it's categorized or characterized, I should say. So
we've always told the people, the applicants, that you know, the possible applicants, potential applicants, that if they're thinking that this site, if this facility is going to exceed the threshold, if they're thinking that today, then they should cite it.
Did we tell them that in this case? We sent them that letter?
Lawrence, I think the letter was to Lawrence Bender, and Lawrence Bender, you know, he knows, I believe he knows that. If you're thinking that your facility is going to exceed the threshold, if you're thinking that today, you should cite it. But they adamantly, as Commissioner Christman said, they responded that they were adamantly that this was going to be less than 50,000 barrels per day, and that there were no plans to exceed that threshold. And that response is in one of the I cases.
That's Lawrence, right?
Yeah.
And that was how long ago?
It was a few months now, like maybe 6 months.
Not that long.
Not that long. Maybe they've changed their mind in their interim.
When we see that they're permitting, when they're permitting at the other agencies at that level, does that provide another trigger for us to say, you're permitting at the other agencies at this level, you need to with us too? Or...
I don't know.
Alana, what are your thoughts?
Well, if you were going to take, you know, formal action, it would be like filing a complaint or something against them to force them to apply. But if you are taking something less than that, maybe it's appropriate to write again with this new information. And is it health department only, or who else are you aware of that they may be permitting at the higher level?
I'm only aware of health, but I think it might involve water too. I'm not sure.
We could get information from them and put more specific information than in the letter and write back. I mean, simply be responding to what he said, but saying, but what about da 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 da?
Yeah.
And it may be a simple way, and they may say, oh yeah, I guess we will. If they don't, I guess at that point, you try to assess what you think of what they put in that response.
Mm-hmm.
And then consider what your next step is after that.
Okay.
So it seems there's new information besides just the newspaper article that could go back to them in writing.
But what is our role if no one ever brings something to us, either an application or a complaint that someone should have brought an application? We don't really have a starting point in it, do we?
You can bring a complaint on your own motion. You can open an investigation, which is not a formal action. It's an information gathering action, but it makes people get on the witness stand and answer questions after being sworn. And then you can use the information that you find to bring a complaint to, as part of your factual proof for a complaint. So you don't have to wait for somebody to bring it to you formally.
I hate to set the precedent, though, that we're out watching construction and keeping track. And if anybody is either mistakenly or intentionally building something without our siting approval that should have had it, that we're going to catch that and bring right. them in here. So to me, we would kind of venture out into setting some new precedent.
Right.
If we do that on our own, we've notified them. But if someone brings a complaint to us, then I think...
Well, I've gotten a letter from Fenton Dooley about this project. And how is our agency going to be involved in the permitting of it? And also the Badlands Conservation Association or Alliance or whatever emailed saying these other agencies are permitting at this level. Why are they not permitting through you? And so, I mean, people are so aware about this that I think that it's going to be clear that they need to either be committed to the under the threshold, or we need to know exactly what their plans are. Or, you know, I think we need more information from them to clarify, because now we're starting to get asked by the public.
And that's why I pointed out top of the fold, a comment, not in quotes, but attributed to their head person. Mm-hmm. That I never seen any response or correction to it, that, oh, no, it's not going to be that big. It just seems to be hanging out there, and it just continues to surprise me that the company isn't more concerned about that, because, frankly, if they get their other permits and now are ready to break ground, you know, the timing of our announcements for a hearing and all that, this could hold them up for months. The fact that they didn't proceed with this. So apparently they're very confident, but like you say, the things you read in the press seem to indicate otherwise. But
yeah.
I guess I've been kind of awaiting someone to complain about it, and I'm sure that their opponents are going to.
I'll think I like Alana's approach.
Well, I was going to say I didn't realize those two communications had come in, mm-hmm. but we should preserve those perhaps in the iFile.
Sure.
And I think they deserve a response. So just mm-hmm. like any other consumer problem or
right.
complaint, we'll follow up with the company, and then we will provide the response from the company to these people,
yeah.
which at least will also put them on notice what the company is saying one way or the other.
Right. I thought I gave you a copy of Fenton Dooley's letter, but I must not have.
I don't remember. I would remember a Fenton Dooley letter.
Well, it's interesting. Yes, I mean it's there. It's not as straightforward as what I just said. It's more like there's a lot of coordinating that he's proposing and stuff. So,
being that we have that bit of communication in that iFile, I think maybe we should preserve them in there, and then this letter and response also, and then everything's in one place.
Okay,
if that's okay.
Yeah,
with you.
And then we can dig up the facts from health and the other agencies and proceed from there.
Right.
Is this area in mine now? Is this portfolio mine?
Would refining, would that be generation?
No, I think this area is your commission.
It would be generation.
So I'll share what I've gotten in the iFile, and you can access it from there. But will you be following up then?
Yes.
Okay.
But I have not received anything from Mr. Dooley or that
right.
group.
So. Yeah. Well, and that's how this always gets awkward. I mean, I'm happy to follow up directly, too. I just want to, you know, be sensitive to the portfolio stuff as well. But we might have a slightly different approach for what we feel comfortable doing. So we'll have to work through that.
We'll get coordinated when we actually see the stuff.
Yeah.
The information.
Okay. All right.
Anything else for discussion that has come up since this came out? Okay. Going to scheduling then. What was with our March 1st meeting? Is there a conflict on that one, though?
Oh, sorry. I have I'm wondering if we can change the time slightly. There's a luncheon that I've been invited. It's a leading ladies luncheon. And it's always on a commission day. And so they've invited me to participate in it as one of their honorees. And it starts at 11:30. And so I was wondering if we could move that meeting a little earlier that day.
So you want to move the... Do we have an informal? Anything scheduled for that time?
Doesn't look like
it. Doesn't look like it.
Okay, so...
Even if we did like 9:30?
You think that... I'm fine with whatever you want on this, so...
I think
you're familiar with your timing to get there and such, so...
Yeah, I think we our agenda probably won't be super long, so I think we should be able to finish up in an hour and a... By in 2 hours, if we were to... start at 9:30.
Okay, and then do you need to start the informal a little later? I think we'll keep it on the calendar in case something comes up.
I think it should be fine, too. The informal at 1:30 should be fine, okay. If we have it.
Okay, so the March 1st commission meeting will start at 9:30.
Perfect.
Okay, and then our monthly budget update. There was a certain date of the month when we need to have it after that all the time, right?
Yes, correct. So anytime after March 15th. It looks like on the 15th there's a commission meeting that day, and it looks like you guys also have a formal hearing scheduled in the afternoon, so I don't know. I'm not sure if we want to try to put one more thing in that day. Otherwise, you know, we can always piggyback it.
March 13th, you said?
The 15th. Wednesday the 15th.
What's the informal? I don't have anything. I mean, I have it reserved, but I don't.
Formal hearing. PSC, Practice and Procedures Rulemaking. I don't know. I need to wrap up, though, because John is waiting for me. So let's pick time and...
Yep. So, I mean, we could do it that day if that day is too full. You know, we can always do it on Friday the 17th. We have our 11 a.m. meeting scheduled that day, but we could always do it before or after that.
I like that idea. 10
o'clock. So 10 o'clock on the...
17th.
You know, we schedule these things on Friday mornings, and we end up down in legislative committee meetings, so... It's kind of the problem.
Well, that's going to be the case for
schedule
anything.
These things in the mornings. Is late on the 15th okay? I don't have a formal hearing scheduled on the 15th on mine. It's not showing up.
Yeah, it's on.
What time is it from?
1:30 to 5.
Oh, so that probably won't work.
How about, can we just pick Tuesday then? Tuesday afternoon, 1:30?
The 21st?
The 14th?
She don't have the numbers then yet.
Yeah, I don't think I'll have the numbers by then.
Thursday?
Thursday, I'm free all day.
I'm booked up, though. I'm doing a symposium for... Okay.
Let's just say, how about the 17th then at 1, if you don't want to do it in the morning? Friday the 17th
at
1.
Yeah, let's schedule it for 1, and then, Jill, if you just remember that, maybe as we get closer, we'll revisit that.
Sure.
If we don't have a legislative thing, we can move it up and get it done with earlier or something like that.
That will work.
Okay. Anything else for scheduling? Thank you.
Yep. I also have the document that you requested yesterday.
Oh, okay.
So just whenever you two would like to get together, if you want to do it this afternoon or Friday, I have that document ready. So I don't know if you want to schedule that.
Okay. Do we have something? We already have one this afternoon, right?
Yeah, we have an informal with MDU. I don't know of anything that we have to testify on tomorrow morning.
How about 10 tomorrow? Does that work?
Yes.
Okay.
10 o'clock, Joe?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Thanks. We're adjourned. Yeah.